welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for November 11th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me from his Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast Annex.
It's the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast Plaza Annex.
Annex. I've got to get that down. It's so long.
Lovely Koenji. Hey, I got these elaborate digs. You know, they got to have a better name than whatever it is they put on the door.
All right, now we're experiencing technical difficulties this week, so we're recording. I'm not sure how the sound's going to turn out, but please bear with us. We'll try to keep it short. How's that?
You always try.
Not going to happen, huh?
Many try, a few succeed. Okay.
Not going to happen. All right, on this week's show, we have an interview with Marty Kienert of the Rakuten Eagles, and we're going to talk about a whole bunch of other things, so let's just get started.
Ring the bases!
All right, Marty Kienert joins us this week for the podcast, and he was the first foreign GM of a Japanese team when he became the GM in 2004 of the Rakuten Eagles. Now, he stayed in that position for a while, and then he moved into a different capacity, and now he's the senior advisor to the team. And obviously, he was thrilled that the team won, and as you'll hear in the interview, he started to get a sense that this was no fluke around the summertime when the team moved into first place. So it was a great time talking to him. I've actually gone up to the park, and he showed me around, and I went to a game there. Just, you know, I think it was a game. Bobby Valentine was still the manager of the Marines, so it was against the Marines, and went up there for a couple games. And Marty's a great host and very gracious host, and showed us around the entire stadium and introduced us to people in the behind the scenes people, and it was really fun.
Yeah, Marty was a really off the charts, off the radar pick for Rakuten, and the thinking, I know he doesn't talk about it, why Hiroshi Mikitani hired him to do the ball club was 2004 was a disaster for Japanese baseball, and the Eagles were born out of that merger between the Kintetsu Buffaloes and the Oryx Blue Wave.
Right.
And basically, they came not because the owners wanted another team. They were trying to reduce the number of teams, but because the fans and the players wanted a team. And Mikitani, who was the first internet guy he and SoftBank took over the same year, 2005, from Daiei. Mm-hmm. But those two were the first high-tech companies to enter baseball. And Mikitani was, he wanted to shake things up, and so he wanted a situation where it was clean of sort of like past guilt by association. So he got Marty Kienert, who as a former ball player with Stanford, and he came over here, and he was a former catcher, and he also had some experience in sports management many years ago. Mm-hmm. But he really had been out of baseball a long time, and he was really unsullied by the old boys network in Japan, and that's what they wanted, a clean, fresh image. So he got that job, and he participated in the hiring of Yasushi Tao as the first manager, who was another guy who'd been out of baseball a little bit. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, he crossed paths at that time with Tatsunori Hara and also Masayuki Kakefu. And Kakefu was rejected, and Hara turned them down. They wanted Hara, I think, was their first choice to manage. At which point Hara said, the Giants have given up. This is 2005. He's been out of the he quit the Giants after the 2003 season, so it's just about a year after that. It's the winter of 2004, and Hara said, according to Marty, that the Giants have given up on me, but I haven't given up on the Giants. Well, it's a good thing for the Giants that they came to their senses.
Yeah, so, that's interesting, and I see Tao actually as an analyst a lot of on radio and TV, and he's really insightful and really good, and talks about some of the finer points of hitting sometimes and pitching. Mm-hmm. And it's good. It's too bad he was given that kind of a team and in only 1 year, because
well, I'll tell you, the thing was with Tao worked out a little bit, but I think I've discussed it before. His whole philosophy was to see how much a bunch of old guys can do, when you give him a full shot.
Mm-hmm.
And because he had been through that at the end of his career, he was one of these old bench players who couldn't play. He was essentially the Andre Jones role back in the majors.
Mm-hmm.
And he figured if we give these guys a chance to play every day, some of them might be pretty good. Now that basically worked out with about three players.
Right, that's not enough to win enough games. Yeah.
Right, and they were trying to. You know, they realized they were lousy, and they tried to play over their heads. And what happened was they played far worse than they really were.
Right. So the team has obviously come a long way. Let's take a listen to what Marty had to say about it. All right, our very special guest this week is Marty Kienert. He's a senior advisor with the Rakuten Eagles. Thank you very much, Marty, for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
And congratulations on winning the Japan Series. We're really, really happy that someone other than the Giants finally won. Seems like it's automatic when the Giants get to the series that they win.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've been there 35 times and won it 22, so yeah, they are certainly the Yankees of Japan, and it's always nice to knock them off their pedestal.
Yeah. All right, now you obviously work and live in Sendai. How has the bond developed between the community and the ball club since 3-11?
Well, it's gotten stronger and stronger. Right after 3-11, the owner did something I thought was really nice. He put TVs in all the evacuation centers, big flat screen TVs, so that when we did get back to playing, that the people would have some type of entertainment, being able to watch our ball club. A lot of the people from the coastline areas that had been following our team, you know, coming to games,
mm-hmm.
Didn't have that luxury anymore. You know, they just didn't have the money to get there. They didn't have the automobile to get there. The trains weren't running to get them here. So that was really nice. And it started on that note, and our players spent a lot of time, you know, visiting the evacuation centers giving out food and needed supplies. So it started on a really good note. You know, that helped bond the community with the ball club, and it continued from there. You know, we've continued to do things with people from the most affected areas through the entire season since.
Mm-hmm.
We invite people that don't have the money to come to ball games, not only to come to ball games, but, you know, give them a barbecue as well.
Wow.
You know, meet players. And so it's gotten stronger and stronger. And I think for some of them, you know, if you saw the pictures, you know, after we won the Japan Series, they were jumping with pure joy. And, it gave them, a little spark and enjoyment in their life to have something happen that they just wanted to see in their community.
Yeah, and some of the images of the people just, you know, jumping for joy at first, but then just overwhelmed and brought to tears by the championship, made it so much more meaningful, I thought, to Eagles fans.
Yeah, we're the Tohoku Rakuten Golden Eagles, not the Miyagi or Sendai.
Right.
And so many people, you know, there were five prefectures, I believe, that were where people died, and up and down the coast. And so, you know, the adjoining prefectures, too, have pretty much adopted the ball club, and we've adopted them. So, it was really a great thing for all of Tohoku.
Yeah, and I remember thinking that there was so much pressure on the ball club to win in that first year, and it didn't do so well. So, obviously, rebounding this way and coming back and winning has to be a really, an extremely strong bonding moment for the ball club.
Yeah, it's very gratifying for us, and it's you know, something that makes the local community proud of. You know, they've arrived, you know, the people of Tohoku, you know, their team, and it means them too. They're number one now.
That's right. Now, I'm never going to make money as a prognosticator, but I did pick the Eagles to finish in the top three before the season started. Now, when did you get a sense that a league title was possible?
Well, it certainly during the summer, you know, when, you know, we've been in first place since the summer. And when you see, you know, Tanaka Makun, you know, going 10-0 and then 11-0 and then 12-0, and as that's happening, and then you see this new rookie Norimoto,
mm-hmm.
having this tremendous season, And then you see that AJ, Andrew Jones, and Casey Maggie are, you know, they're hitting more home runs than our entire team, you know, all 70 of our guys last year, you know, as the summer goes along.
Right.
You know, all of a sudden you see the ingredients coming together. Fujita, that we got from the Bay Stars as a defensive, you know, specialist, is hitting too, you know.
Right. He brought his bat with him.
Yeah, and we didn't know he had a bat. So, you know, everything started to seem to gel during the summer. And, you know, all of a sudden we said, this is not a fluke. You know, this looks to be the real deal. So from summertime for me on, you know, I said, we can do this. This could very well happen.
Yeah, I brought it up on the show. I know that the team moved into first place, and I noted that, and then I talked about the possibility, but, you know, it's still hard to fathom. But, you know, we've seen this all-time record-breaking season from Masahiro Tanaka, and what was the real projection for his success when he was drafted?
Well, you know, Yuki Saito and he, there were the two, you know, dream boys that came together in the finals of Koshien.
Right.
And certainly I think at that time that Saito was the favorite in a way, because he was such a good looking young boy, and, you know, that he brought his handkerchief up.
He had the nickname.
Wipe his sweat, and so he became the handkerchief OG, you know. The
handkerchief prince, yep.
And so, but looking at Tanaka, you know, he was like a size or two larger. You know, he looked so much more sturdy. He looked like a workhorse.
Mm-hmm.
He had a special fire about him. You know, while Saito was a little cooler, Tanaka was more emotional. And sometimes you want a guy that's more emotional. So I liked his looks from his size. You know, most really good pitchers have been sturdy. They're bigger. You know, a Darvish is bigger, a Nomo is bigger. The most of your big fish, you know, like Sasaki, Daimajin Sasaki, they're big boys.
Yeah.
And so you, with a pitcher, you know, it's better to have a guy that's got a lot of size, a Kuroda type of pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked to me a lot like Kuroda. You know, Kuroda's just always been a workhorse wherever he's been, and he's always produced, and that's the kind of pitcher he looked to me at the time. So we were not disappointed at all to get him, and it was just great for us. And I thought he has, you know, he had really great potential, but whether, you know, you can never predict that he'd go to do this kind of thing, something that's never been done before.
Right.
Yeah, he looked very good from the get-go.
Yeah, I thought after that first year, and I remember talking to Jose
Fernandez
1 year, and he told me how that the team was grooming him to be the ace, and that he was untouchable, and, you know, even if he gets into trouble late in games, they were going to maybe go to the mound and talk to him, but they weren't going to take him out. And I think all that stuff has paid off, because he finishes games off. You know,
Well, we didn't realize it, you know, in high school, and we're just watching him, but once he started pitching for us, we realized that he's one of those special pitchers that has a second and even a third gear. A lot of pitchers come out and throw everything they've got from, you know, pitch one. And he's, you know, a smart pitcher too. He may throw at 90% the first couple of innings, and that's maybe why he gives up more runs early than he does late. But when he gets, you know, as the game progressively goes on, he starts throwing harder. And late in the games is when he's almost unhittable. And that's kind of what you see in most really great pitchers.
Right.
Is that they've got that next gear that they can go to. Frequently, you know, he's faster in the ninth inning than he is in the first. And that's just, you know, a real credit to him, is knowing how to pitch.
Yeah, I've seen that. All right, now we expect him to be posted in the offseason. We don't know how that's going to go, but given that everything's moving in that direction, what will the club do with the posting fee that they think they'll receive from the MLB team?
Well, first of all, you know, the posting system has to be settled upon.
Yes,
you know, Major League Baseball was not happy with the posting system and has asked for some changes, and those are under discussions right now.
Right.
Yeah, I think that it'll be settled. You know, but I think major league teams want Tanaka, and, you know, for our ball club, Mr. Mikitani, the owner, is a smart man, and he knows that, you know, if he wants to get something back, a return out of his star player, you know, he needs to be posted. So I think it will be worked out. Speculating, you know, about what's going to be done with the money. if and when it comes in,
right.
Is a little bit difficult. I'm not the decision maker in that. The owner, Mikitani, and the president, Tachibana, and our key executives will get together and decide upon it. My guess is that there will be ballpark improvements. I've seen stories that they're going to put up a dome. Even if we get $50 million for him, that's not enough to build a dome stadium. So
maybe a dome parking lot.
yeah, we could build would be good. That's one thing that would be nice to have. We don't have enough parking, so it would be nice to have a parking structure build now where we have a graveled, yard.
Right.
I think, the thing that we need, since we're the smallest ballpark and we had the needs during the playoffs and then the Japan series, we just needed more room for more people. And season tickets are selling like hotcakes right now. And to have, more room for people next year, the temporary seating that we put in for the playoffs and the Japan series, we need to make that permanent seating.
Yeah.
So I think the greatest likelihood is that the money will be used to put in permanent, a permanent expansion of seats, because although we're listed in most of the books as seating 23,000, we were only seating about 21,500 in actuality.
Okay.
And we squeezed in over 25,000 with the extra seating during the playoffs and series. And we need to do that. We need to put in seats. And I think there have been plans since the first year that it can be expanded if we put in permanent seating to up to about 30,000 fans. And that would be good, to be 30,000 rather than 21,500.
All right. We'll keep an eye on all those developments in the offseason here. Now, in Game 1 of the Japan Series, you guys did not pitch Makun, and a lot of us were surprised out here. And then you ended up losing that game. So the two questions here are, how come Makun didn't pitch Game 1, and what was the prediction or expectation after losing Game 1 of the Japan Series?
Yeah, we were all surprised, or many of us, even in the ball club, were surprised when Hoshino, chose to start with Norimoto rather than Tanaka. But Norimoto had pitched so well at the end of the season, he's the all-time, winningest rookie for us. He won 15 games.
Right.
And, he's one of our, he's one of the key three, Norimoto, Mima, and Tanaka. And so when he threw him, I think they were perhaps giving Tanaka a little more rest, and also thinking about what may happen in Tokyo, and then come back with Tanaka, the following Saturday if needs be. So I don't think it was a bad choice in hindsight, and he pitched a heck of a game. We only lost the game 2-0. So if we had scored like we have been scoring, our ball club has been scoring a lot more runs this year than last year.
That's true.
He easily could have won that game. So it wasn't that all that bad, and I guess his thought was, even if we lose that first game, well, Tanaka will come back and we'll win the next one and tie the series and be right there. So that's what happened. And even people within the ball club were surprised when Hoshino chose to do that. But in hindsight, it turned out not to be bad strategy.
All right. Well, I'm going to ask him one day. I hope he doesn't get mad at me.
He won't get mad at you. No. I mean, he probably if he had really wanted to throw and had insisted upon that. And I'm sure the manager explained why he was doing it. He probably accepted it. So if he, he's been known to in the past saying, like, I don't want to come out of the game. And manager is usually, with him, what he's done this year, going along with what he wanted to do.
Right. I understand. All right, so last question here, and we'll let you go. What should we expect from the Eagles next season? Obviously, with Makun, the posting system and all that stuff up in the air, we don't know what the team's going to look like in the makeup and some of the foreign players. But what can we expect from Rakuten next season?
We've built a good organization, in many respects. We're the money ball team of Japan. We were number 10 in payroll and knocked off a team that's number 1 in payroll in Japan with more than double our total payroll. And the organization's good now. Our scouts are excellent. We're doing a better job evaluating foreign players. And we've got a good nucleus of young players that I think we can rely on. Certainly, Norimoto and Mima. are excellent pitchers. And you have to remember, we drafted the number one high school lefty in the country. In the draft to get Yuki Matsui. So we may have our golden ace replacement right there for Makun if he leaves. So I've got a good feeling about, you know, having a really solid club. You know, I mean, Genji's terrific and Fujita's terrific, and we've just got a good club. I just hope that, and I think we will probably bring AJ back and Maggie. And I know that Casey wants to come back, and it seems that AJ does too. I was a little concerned that Andrew, you may want to call it a day. You know, he's 36. He's not a young boy anymore. He'll be 37 next year.
Right.
And, you know, he played a long time and has made a lot of money. And he does, I don't think he has to play baseball to make a living. You know, he could retire if he wanted to. But I know that Andrew Jones enjoyed playing in Japan this year. He had a good time. You know, he played in 143 of our 144 games.
Right, and he only missed the one game because he partied too much, I think, after you guys won the championship, right?
Well, I don't want to comment on that. you know, but another thing is Casey McGee, he played in all 144 games this year, and we've never had a foreign player ever do that before. He's the first.
Right. Yeah.
And 143 is great, too. So both those guys were really key. You know, they played so hard, and they hit 54 home runs between them, which is two more than our entire team hit last year. So they were a huge plus to this ball club, and this is certainly an excellent chance that, you know, Casey will be back, and I think that Andrew Jones will come back, too. So we could keep them, you know, the nucleus, you know, together.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Matsui, the young Matsui, the lefty, the best in the country, he could, you know, quite ably fill the hole that we'll have if Tanaka leaves. It may take a year or two for him to really get there, but, you know, Tanaka was a big plus from his first year. You know, it wasn't like he was this year, but, you know, he was a big plus. So I have great expectations that we have a solid organization that will win for many years to come.
All right. Well, I think you were the nation's team in the Japan series, and you gave a lot of joy to the region, and it was a great series, and we appreciate you taking the time this morning with us to talk. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, John.
All right. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Marty, thank you so much again for waking up early and talking to us.
Yeah, it's good to hear you. I saw Marty at the start of the Climax series, and then I didn't get to see him again. We were both hopping around, I think. Marty's always got many things to do, and I really appreciate you taking your time out of your very busy schedule to talk with us.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Now, as far as what he had to say, what stood out for you the most?
Well, a couple of things. One is, yeah, absolutely. I was up there in April 2011.
I remember you got to do the story.
Yeah, great story. Great trip. Not the least because I could go to the big evacuation centers, which was sort of motoring down, or I guess winding down at that point, a month and a half after the earthquake. But to see the people who had been affected by it and hear their stories was to be honest, put the opening day at the Eagles Park in perspective, which was, it's just a ball game.
Exactly. I always tell people, you know, before I took this job, I was writing about news stuff. I was writing more human interest stories and stuff, and this is all about baseball. Let's keep it in perspective. It's a game, but it's fun. It's important, and it impacts society.
Sure.
In the end, it's just a game. It's just a business. So
sure. So anyway, to go back to that. So that was one thing, and the other thing was that, and of course, Marty has been. I'll give him a plug. He's been. He's very much a person who's involved with other people. You know, you can say whatever you like, but I'll tell you, he's in, and he's getting building consensus, and he's working with people. He's got his hands doing all kinds of different things. He was with his students and such after the earthquake. He's very involved in the Sendai community, and it's what he's really good at. It's what they should have been having Marty do from the day one, is being out there connecting with the community, because that's what he does well.
Right.
So anyway, So after the earthquake, and yes, Mikitani did a great stuff. You know, you went into the, I went into the evacuation center. There's the TV and bang, and that was all on TV. It was well publicized. I think that was, you know, the part of the teams doing it. And just to sort of fast forward through all the ups and downs the teams had with the three first managers, the team really developed. I think Nomura built a lot of talent. Marty Brown built some talent. I think Vintal obviously did contribute some of that with the guys, with the veterans.
Right.
Particularly Takeshi Yamasaki, you know, giving him, although he wasn't a fan of Yamasaki when he first showed up. We put Yamasaki on the cover of the Daily Yomiuri Baseball preview that spring.
I remember those things.
I got a picture of him holding it at then Fullcast Stadium, and he said, maybe I'll put one here on the bench so the manager will see it and know I can play. So anyway, he did play for them. Anyway, to fast forward, yeah, the team acquired a lot of talent. I don't want to go into the details that Marty does, as I have a different opinion about Kazuya Fujita. I always thought he could hit. But, yeah, the big thing, I think, was – the big thing this year was the wealth of young talent and that real – I won't say outspoken, but willing to lead foreign talent they got from Andrew Jones and – the guy in the lineup who just goes out and does it every day, Casey McGee.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that no foreign player had played 144 games and played the full season for him. And like I've joked, I thought Andre Jones would have played all 144, but maybe he was, and Marty wouldn't comment about it, but a lot of the guys played that next day after they clinched the league championship like they had not slept. So, I can't believe they only signed. I can understand the 1 year signing of Andrew, but I'm not sure about the 1 year signing of Casey. And you would think, as those guys were moving through a very successful season, that they would have come to him and say, "Hey, we want you to come back next year. Let's get a contract extension." I know Japanese teams don't do it. I know it's
wrong. Well, I bet you that was going on because Andrew basically said right away when he left that, interestingly enough, he went from the guy who basically wanted to show everybody, he didn't say back in the States, but that was sort of implied. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but that's how it sounded to me.
Sure, yeah.
Show people back in the States what he could play in a full season. And I think when he said he had a disappointing season, I think he had in mind something like batting close to 300. And,
right.
You know.
Everything else was fine, right? Except for maybe the number of strikeouts. But
yeah, except basically for the only thing that had looked bad was the batting average, because everything else was really good. Anyway, so he wanted a little more showier numbers. But anyway, I think that the idea was play here 1 year, show off, go back to the States. Now, that's how it sounded to me. Now, if I'm wrong, Andrew, my apologies, man. But that's how it sounded. And now he said, the day he left Narita, I have to paraphrase this because I only saw the quotes in Japanese.
Right.
I'm not the kind of player who comes to Japan and just wants to go back to the States.
All right. Well, and he said before in the interview I think that you did with him that he wanted to stay here and he wanted to play a few more years the first time he was on our show.
Okay.
And, again, with Casey, it would just seem that they would have gone to these guys during the season and said, hey, we want you to come back next year. We're really happy with what you're doing. And
now, Casey's situation's a little different. Mm-hmm. Casey's is... He's not, I don't think any of these, all these guys are individuals and none of them are a stereotype. Casey's pretty far from the stereotype. He's maybe a stereotypical ball player. You know, he goes out and gets the job done and he prepares and so on and so forth. We hear it every week. But he also is his wife has a postgraduate degree and she has things that she's been wanting to do. And he's got two kids and one of his kids has special needs and his son, and he's very in tune with what's best for his family.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that he didn't know what he wanted to do. I think the team wants him to come back. If I were the team, I wouldn't let him leave without a contract. But he said he wanted to go back, find some quiet time with his family, and talk out what they want to do.
Right, and he's 31, so he's...
Now he said he wanted to manage, but he also said that he's been playing baseball basically because his wife was... allowing him to be, you know, he was basically, he's saying, you know, like, we're a team and the wife's been sacrificing so I can play baseball.
Right.
And she's got things she wants to do. And, you know, I have so much respect for him thinking that the world, again, life is more than just his baseball career, which is pretty rare.
Right. Well, a lot of us are at the mercy of our wives, so it's not...
Well, we all are, but we all don't admit it.
Yeah, that's true, too. I was impressed with Casey, and obviously we did an interview earlier on in the season, and I was impressed by his focus and all that stuff. I didn't get the backstory about his wife and his children and all that stuff. So I just thought he was a consummate professional. He prepared well. He seemed to be, you know, he reminded me a lot of Alonzo Powell in his nature, in that, you know, hey, look, I'm going to get mine. They're going to throw the ball over the plate at some point, and I'll be able to hit it, and I'm going to be able to produce. But I think he was, you know, I did see at one point, I heard a story on TV. I was watching something that talked about the players going over to each other's houses for dinner. I think maybe it was actually after a game in a Hero on-field interview. And they talked about the fact that one of the players had gone over to Casey's place for dinner and that he never got to go over to their place for dinner. And, you know, that kind of camaraderie that they really had a strong team building kind of an atmosphere there. And I think in part it was because of these two players. And I really think they need not just the production, but the fact that they brought the team together. And they were all pulling in the same direction. It's something that we, you know, I've complained about the Bay Stars not doing that. Everybody's pushing the car, the broken down car, but people are pushing it in different directions. And, you know, they were all pushing in the same direction. I think that's what led, I mean, from top to bottom, I think that's what led to this result.
I think one of the things that, I think what you're saying, a manifestation of that was the Eagles, I used to see individual players with good approaches.
Mm-hmm.
But this year what I saw is a top, I don't know if it was top to bottom, but I would say a fairly uniform way of attempt to get good at bats that I don't really remember seeing a lot in Japanese teams.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen it a little bit with the Hawks when Akiyama showed up. With the young kids he brought up, I saw it a little. But most Japanese managers are content with, well, you know, you've got what, you know, the players are what they are to a large degree. You can't really shape them a lot by the time they're 25 or 26. You just give them playing time and, you know, give them positions to succeed. But with the Eagles, I think this was a team thing and not a management thing. I think it's an impossible thing to manage. But I think the presence of Andrew Jones in that lineup had a very large impact. And I think it had a large impact on the Dutch team in the WBC as well. I think his presence, I'm not a big intangible, you know, intangibles guy, but I think the team responded this year. Now, whether they keep responding, that's a good question, whether they adopt more of these habits. I mean, I've seen managers punch fundamentals, punch batting approaches like they're trying to punch a wall and just keep doing it. And some of the players buy into it, some of them don't. You know, Marty Brown, and I've seen Trey and all these guys do it, and I've rarely seen it succeed. I don't remember seeing it succeed on such a level that the Eagles did this year.
Yeah. Now, getting back to what some of the things that Marty said in the interview, as far as what to do with the posting fee, should it come to fruition, we have to emphasize that, but I think in some
Well, there will be a posting system.
Yeah, there's going to
be. It's just a matter of whether it's going to be a new one or the old one.
Right,
if Japan rejects the new one, it'll end up being the old one.
But still, we don't know if he's actually going to be posted. The team hasn't actually come out and said that yet officially. As far as But we're all assuming that it's going to happen. So
essentially, the language, they haven't said we're required to post him, but what they have said that they are obligated to discuss his situation. And I think the way Japanese baseball is working right now, if you do what he did, if you do what Tsuyoshi Nishioka did in 2010, well, there's another backstory there, which we've discussed in the past, then you feel like the guy did all he could for us. He held up his end of the bargain and more.
Right. Exactly.
And we, if we don't reward him, if we don't accede to his wishes, we have zero credibility.
Yeah. So assuming that they do that, I like the idea of putting the money into the park. It's so cold in March. And, you know, he said dome. I had never really actually heard any news about a potential dome. But I think that outside stadium is good for that team. And I think it's an advantage in March when it's really cold. And I think it didn't turn out to be an advantage in October because it wasn't so cold. But I think having the weather affect the game is nice out there. I think that's good for them. But, yeah, putting it into that stadium and making the stadium experience better for fans. And
that's a also, great experience as it is
It's
right
a great
now,
experience, but I just don't know about those temporary seating. And obviously we had an earthquake this morning. I don't trust it. So if they could get something more permanent and something more stable, I would be obviously that stadium was rocked by that earthquake in 2011, and it's just, you know, I would like to see them make upgrades and maybe at some point do something with parking and all that stuff, because I do remember being at the game and after the game with everyone leaving at the same time. It was a lot more congested than some of the other parks around Japan, because everybody had to go one direction and there weren't.
There's
a lot
only
of
one. Around. There's essentially one exit to the park.
Yeah, so that kind of thing would be nice if they could funnel some people in a different direction and get them out. And that part would be nice. So it'd be nice if they can do that. Also, it was very interesting to hear him be stumped as well as to why Norimoto got the start in Game One and not Ma-kun.
Well, a number of things in that series were weird. But I don't want to rehash that, except that repeatedly Hoshino was talking about, it's almost like he was channeling Davey Johnson in the 2009 WBC. These guys needed work. That's why I kept them in the game against Japan to get their heads beaten in. He was saying, this is something that will be important for them later in their career, as opposed to, this will be something that's important for us trying to win four games. He was talking about Norimoto's career.
Yeah, I still don't get it, and it would, you know, the only thing I could think of is like the second day after they're pitching a game is when maybe the soreness is at its peak after you throw, but maybe the day after you're still. In fact, it was less than 24 hours. It wasn't even a 24-hour span.
No, and
from when he started his first pitch.
The whole Tanaka thing is again. Japanese managers, I wonder how many Japanese managers Ochiai could have told him, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Get out of here. Go home. I don't want to see you here, you know, as you've said. So,
yeah, if I see you.
I don't want to use you, so I don't want to see you.
Right.
So, I think Ochiai is probably the only. You know, there's probably very few Japanese managers who have that much discipline to be able to take their star and say, no, son, you've done enough. And Hoshino's discipline is there, but it's in a more orthodox direction.
Well, as it turned out, you know, we have access to the results, and as it turned out, none of it was a mistake, per se, because they won. However, I just thought,
He hasn't had his MRI yet. So.
Yeah, the players won. They got the championship. Hopefully, they didn't risk too much with Tanaka. But the other thing that stood out for me was that he said when they were talking about drafting, well, it's not that they had the options, right? But they got lucky and they got Makun. But he said he was...
Oh, you mean...
I'm talking about when they got Makun.
Right.
As opposed to the Handkerchief Prince and Yuki Saito. Yeah, yeah. That he said he looked like a horse. You know, he's big. And
well, the Handkerchief Prince wasn't available. He wasn't available in the draft because he went to college.
Oh, but yeah, at the same time, yeah. Those were the two guys that they're talking about. I assume that Marty was talking about before the draft, and they were looking at the kids and trying to figure out what they were going to do. And that I think Saito announced shortly after, but it was after he finished his high school career that he was going to go to college. So
yeah, it was probably a month before the draft, and it was national news, front page news.
Right. But the thing that he pointed out that Makun, you know, who's 6'2", it looked like a big horse and reminded him of Hiroki Kuroda. But the kid they drafted this year, Yuki Matsui, is about maybe 5'9".
Yeah.
And he looks more like a work pony than
that's
a workhorse.
Nice.
I know, but I'm saying this guy is tiny. I mean, compared to Makun.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing. You go for the guys who get results in the end. You know, you like an image, but it doesn't matter if the guy gets results. So
again, in 2007, I think it was 2007-2008 with Kohei Hasebe, who's a little left-hander, about the same height. They got him, and he had some really good results before he became a pro, and now he's just been like a mediocre pitcher. Maybe
his problem isn't his pitches. His problem is throwing his pitches. His problem is executing a game plan.
Well, whatever his problem is, he's one of those very slight. I mean, he might be less than 5'9" in terms of height.
Yeah, but that's not the issue. The issue isn't whether. I mean, that's a later issue. He hasn't been able to pitch well enough to have to stand up to a workload.
All I know is his former manager, Katsuya Nomura, was always complaining that he didn't have enough size and he couldn't throw the ball hard enough and all these things. And that's the same thing I would say with Yuki Matsui. But we have to see. I mean, I'm not going to judge him, obviously.
I'll agree. I think Matsui is more of the ideal comparison to him would be Toshiya Sugiuchi.
Okay.
Although he's not a sidearmer. Yeah. And he throws harder than Sugiuchi did, but he's basically a guy who depends all on his control, and he's got superb breaking balls. But this is, you know, I don't think, you know, if you're a standard major league guy, a major league scout, and you're trying to sell a player to a team, nobody says, well, I want this left-handed guy who's, you know, 5'10", because the teams will just laugh at you. And you could say, well, he was in college and he had a 0.00 ERA and he went 20-0. And this is, yeah, but he's 5'10". Get rid of him.
Right.
I'm exaggerating a little bit. But basically, nobody cares what you did. And this applies to a lot of major league teams. So there are a number of people in the major leagues who couldn't give a hoot what you did in the college or in the minors if you don't fit the body type they're looking for.
Yep.
But again, as well as he competed in high school and for the things that he did show, basically he's going to get a chance to show what he's got. And because he's a top draft choice, he's going to get a lot of chances to show what he's got. And some of these guys in Japan will – pitchers generally, if they succeed, they're going to do – if they can succeed at the minor league level, they're going to get a shot. But a lot of batters who don't fit the profile will be left to rot in the minors and succeed and succeed and succeed. And everybody says, yeah, but he's not the kind of player who can actually be successful. You know, those players like Takeshi Yamasaki and Ichiro Suzuki who never did anything because they were had the wrong approach.
All right, well, let's move along and talk about the approach that players are going to take with the major league teams are going to take with this new posting system. Now, it seems that they have agreed with NPB, and they have an agreement in place, but that the players are still not happy with it, and that's why it's held up here.
Now, whose players are we talking about, MLBPA or the Japan PA?
The Japanese players is what I saw. Okay. I saw a report, and it just said that the players were not happy. They didn't see any merit. And I didn't get that either, because the merit that they have is that they can scoop up a lot of money and get to the major leagues is what they want, but what's the sticking point for the players that you know of?
None that I know of. I think their sticking point is they don't want to agree to anything. They don't want to agree to anything that NPB suggests because that would make them subservient.
Yeah, I saw Don Nomura ranting on Twitter, and he said the whole posting system should be scrapped altogether.
Well, the problem with the whole posting system being scrapped is the problem of is that it won't be the reason it won't be scrapped is because there's a bunch of major league teams that want at least nominal access to Japanese talent.
At least.
And the reason the posting system was put in place was, A, you know, of course, to give the Japanese teams some compensation for their players, but B, to keep teams like essentially what happened with the San Diego Padres and the Lotte Marines, where they had a deal in which Urabu would play for the Padres.
Mm.
And everybody else is saying, well, we don't have it, you know. So this is limited to the 12 teams that have exclusive deal with the Japanese 12 teams, and the other teams are out of the picture.
Right.
So that was the other thing. They needed a system that was open to everybody.
Well,
and and if you have no system, then it's open to that danger of there's a backroom deal.
Right.
Now, that's always going to happen. Now, here's another why I put this, on a couple of places, on my Twitter, that one of an acquaintance of mine had a brilliant idea, which is let's, however, make it like soccer, a more open transfer system.
Mm-hmm.
There's two things that need to be done here. One, to fix this, you have a situation where the major league teams – if you're a major leaguer and you sign as a free agent with another team, you file for free agency and sign, your team gets compensation.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a major league team and you sign a Japanese player, you give up nothing. The Japanese team loses everything.
Right.
They get no draft pick. Okay, there needs to be compensation.
Right.
There needs to be compensation. That's number one. It's not for real true free agency, but if you're going to say it's okay for major league teams, but it's Japanese teams don't count,
right.
That's a joke.
Right.
Okay, there's problem one with the posting system, or with the free agency. Two, my friend's solution was this. Essentially, we were talking on the phone one day, and we said, okay, we came up with this solution. You have a bid in which the teams bid on, the teams make contract offers. 3 years for however many million dollars, 4 years for however million dollars.
Right.
The player then gets to choose the contract offer, whichever one he wants.
Right.
Then they negotiate a deal. When they have a deal, the teams then negotiate a transfer fee. Now, if the player says no deal, he can go to the next team. If the team says no deal, the player has to go to the next team.
Right.
And if this way, the player gets what he wants, the major league team gets the deal they want. Both sides, all four parties involved, both teams and both, well, the player and both teams, all three parties, essentially get a deal they're good with.
All right, well, here's the thing that I see with that. And for years, on several levels, this has really been a cash cow for NPB teams that they scoop up a lot of money. At least they get a lot of money for this player who they're losing, and it's usually a big-name player who's got a lot of impact and value, like the Darvish or a Nakajima or, in this case, a Malkun. And, of course, you know, the teams will find another player. I think it's Michael Westbay of the Pro Yaku Report has always said that people are going to step up and they're going to be new stars. So we know that there's going to be replacement players there who come up and they're going to eventually get stardom.
So they're going to keep the level essentially the same.
Well,
so instead of proving we're more or less staying treading water.
It takes time to build it up, but of course, okay, we're going to be able to replace that person. But in that case, in that scenario that you just painted here, the team now is at the mercy of a deal's already in place, right, with the player and the team,
mm-hmm.
per se. Now they have to come up with a transfer fee.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what's wrong
with
that?
The bidding? Well, I'm just saying in the reverse order now, it's the bidding war,
right.
That you have that drives up the price, and then you can have there's no leverage now for the team to actually.
Sure there is, because the team can veto it. The team can say, we're out of here, you go to the next team, because they're jerking us around.
Okay. All right,
the team can veto any deal.
So the NPB team can veto the deal.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if
the MLB team can veto the deal.
Tanaka and the Yankees have agreed to a great contract for him. If they say, well, we're only going to pay you $50 million, they're saying, think again.
Okay.
And if you don't like it, we'll go to another team that wants to give us more.
All right, well, that makes sense. That seems like a viable plan for the future, but can it happen? I don't really see
it. No, it can't happen because that would require both sides to...
Too much
thought and
cooperation on both sides.
Yeah, too much progressive thinking.
Yeah, I think basically MLB has asked, the reason why we're getting a change here is to make a change here in the posting system is to make it more cost efficient for these MLB teams to pluck the talent from MLB because they've been paying Kings ransoms, and we've seen what, you know, the Daisuke Matsuzaka and the Keigawa contracts and situations have brought for teams. Two teams.
That's right. Yeah. They shouldn't. All this big spending on players who don't pan out. Like, you know, they should ban that kind of thing in MLB. So there'd be no more Kevin Browns. There'd be no more Kevin Browns, and there'd be no more Barry Zitos.
I don't know about that.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, they complain about the big money they spend on Japanese, and then they say, well, geez, you know, a third of the free agent pitcher big pitching contracts are Matsuzaka was not a bad deal. It's just that the end was bad.
Right. It didn't turn. Would you have paid that for one or two good seasons? I don't think that's worth the money.
No, it wasn't worth the money, but it wasn't Barry Zito country. He was vastly more productive than Barry Zito was, although Barry Zito's last year, he was quite good. But so he was, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. One, you know, 5-year deal for a guy who's worth 3 months.
Well, the talk about the posting system now is that Ma-Kun could fetch more money than Darvish. And, you know, I've seen Yankees, Dodgers, Giants, Rangers. Yeah, I think it's a lot of people are going to be sitting at the table with their big boy wallets. And this is going to be some serious debate if it comes to fruition.
Well, the New York Post... The New York Post was saying that essentially the Yankees are planning to outbid everybody, which means that the price could be, the total package for Masahiro Tanaka could be $150 million.
Yeah. Wow. All right, well, let's talk about a lot less money and talk about the guys who are on free agency or declared free agency now in Japan. And at the top of the list, I have Yasuyuki Kataoka and Hideaki Wakui, both of the Seibu Lions.
And I think those are the two guys that people are interested in.
Yeah, and then Kan Otake of the Hiroshima Carp, I think, is a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, he's been having negotiations. He's been having not very happy negotiations with the Carp, who probably have the bad habit of pointing out his record. His inability to pitch a lot, you know. So,
yeah.
And players take that kind of personally.
I wonder why. But I'm who really intrigues me this offseason is going to be Wakui, and part of the reason is because obviously he's still only 27.
He probably looks young for his age because his maturity level is probably about half that.
Oh, no.
He's young at heart, baby.
He's young at heart. I don't know about his maturity level. I'm just wondering, was he injured? Because remember, he came off of the Sawamura Award season and he got hurt. And I'm just wondering if it's an injury or if he's part of the non-flesh eating zombie parade that he just happens to be a pitcher because he's got no emotion, he's got no life to him. I don't know if he's harboring a grudge, maybe because he had the woman problems a few years back and the club shoved him into the minor leagues and didn't back him the way he wanted, and maybe that's why he just hasn't put a lot of, let's say, life into his fastball. I don't know what it is. It's just weird.
Given his lack of maturity, and I mean this in all due respect, given his lack of maturity, probably he has some injuries due to his overdoing it, his lack of self-control, that basically have relegated him to being a reliever. I don't think he's got the gas to be a starter anymore. He's probably got some injury or something that's going to do that. And now, on the other hand, it could be the other issue. It could be personal issues. So, Kataoka, to me, is probably more interesting. But here's a guy who, again, he's always getting hurt. And I don't think he's a great player, but he's been a great player. He's been an important player for the Lions. I don't want to talk too much about him, except to say the story in the Nikon Sports yesterday was that the Giants are interested in signing Kotoko, which should come as no surprise.
Right, because it's second baseman of the week or the
yeah,
year.
Yeah, well, I was telling John, I think Tatsunori Hara has an app on his iPhone called Who's My Second Baseman Today? And Kataoka's name popped up. So the Giants are this is a team that's gone through about 15 Japanese guys in the last 5 years, and certainly five foreign. They've acquired a foreign second baseman every year for the last 4 or 5 years. I'm going to say 4 years. I think they had one for 2 years, barely.
And remember, Jose Lopez was the second baseman before he came over here, and I think he thought he was going to play second base.
Well, they got a gold glove first baseman, so no problem there.
So, yeah, Kotoke. Also, it's Kuriyama, Takumi Kuriyama of Seibu's declared his free agency as well. I thought I saw his name on the list.
No, declared eligible.
He's eligible, okay. I don't think they can afford to lose all three of those guys.
But now, Kuriyama's a great player. He doesn't have the arm anymore, but he's a great player, as you know.
Yep. So. Some of the other names, Kenichi Nakata of the Dragons, who is thinking about making a move, and I think Hanshin showed some interest there. Katsuhiro Nagakawa of Hiroshima. I don't think there's... You know, every time I see a pitcher available, I think a couple teams. I think Oryx and I think Bay Stars. But I don't think these guys are going to help either one of those clubs. So I'm not really sure. Another interesting name on the list was Hiroyasu Tanaka of Yakult. He's a really good defensive second baseman who had a down year at the plate. But, you know, I think he can still help some teams out there, if not Yakult.
Well, yeah, he could help somebody. He had a really horrible year at the plate. I don't know what his issue was. He was all, you know, he always stays the same, always positive, always Beavis. But he could help somebody. But is he worth any money? The answer is really no.
We'll have to see. He's really good defensively, though. Also,
yeah, he's good. So he's good for the Swallows in that he gives them another guy on the bench. But he's a bench player. So.
And then an intriguing player is Yoshitomo Tani, who wanted to leave the Giants because he's been sitting around gathering dust on the bench, but he said
he doesn't want to leave the Giants. They kicked him out.
I think he won't. I think the feelings were mutual, and I think that started.
Okay.
I saw him with a scrunchy face about 2 years ago when he wasn't getting playing time. So I think he's glad to leave, but he's 79 hits shy of the 2000 mark, and I don't see him playing full-time for anybody. I don't really even see him playing half a season for anybody as an outfielder. But if he's in the Pacific League and he can get some DH at-bats, and if he can pinch hit enough, I think he can get to 79 hits eventually.
Yeah, he's still a pretty, you know, he's certainly a more valuable player than Tanaka is, except that, you know, it's harder, it's easier to find a player who can still play the outfield. I mean, he knows what he's doing. He knows where the ball's hit to. He can run fairly well. He's not fast enough to be a pinch runner or a defensive star, but heck no.
Yeah, he'll be 41 when the season opens next year. I don't think he's a runner in a pinch, not a pinch runner.
No, but he can, you know, he can still hold his own in the outfield well enough to keep him in as a, you know, come in as a pinch hitter and stay in the outfield guy.
I wouldn't put him in the outfield, but I see he's not that much worse than a lot of left fielders. I can see that, but
he's
pinch hitting late in the game, and then you're going to put him in the outfield. I think you're hurting your defense, not helping it. But you know, there's a role for him somewhere, and I think, you know, I thought about Hanshin as he can replace Hiyama as a pinch hitter, or the Carp, he could replace Maeda as a pinch hitter.
Maeda.
Yeah. So I thought those places, but maybe the Pacific League might be a good place for him, where he can get some DH at bats in a few games, and he can still, you know, he can still jump all over left-handed pitching. So I thought that'd be a good place for him.
Yep. Well, Wayne and I, when he came up and batted in the Japan series, and his walk-up music with the Giants starts by shouting "Take me back," and we're going, "Wow, that takes us back when Tani was still playing."
Take It Back. Yeah, that is a good song, too. All right, I wanted to talk quickly about the Hiroki Kokubo gang that's playing yep. some exhibition games in Taiwan. They won the first two games. The third game is today. We're taping on Sunday morning, so we're not privy to the results yet. 2-4 to 2 wins. I think Chinese Taipei or Taiwan, whatever you want to call them, they were a victim of their poor defense more than Japan won these games. But
well, that was certainly game one.
Well, they had a game. I'm sorry, they had a hit last night that they ruled a hit. That if you look at the fielder at second base trying to get out of the way more than get in the way, I think I would have ruled it an error because he didn't get his body in front of the ball. But they ruled it a hit, and it was the first 2-run single. I think it was Akiyama again.
Yep.
I gotta say, when you're looking away from the ball and flailing your arms, that's usually that should just be ruled an error. But he wasn't willing to get in front of the ball. So anyway, scoring, you know, I guess you can score it any way you want. But
two of the Taiwan, both of the Taiwan runs yesterday were driven in by players who play in Japan. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Lee Su Swan and Young Dai Kang.
Yeah. Yo Daikon to his friends. Whatever you want to call him.
Or vice versa. Yeah. Okay.
Whatever you want to call him. And, interesting games, fun to watch. It's weird seeing Kokubo stand over there as a manager, and it just looked like he wants to run on the field and take the swings himself.
Or not really, still trying to figure out what managers do.
Yeah, you know, he still looks like he's trying to find himself in terms of what kind of manager he's going to be. But what I did like about him was the way he handled some of the pitchers in that, you know, he didn't send somebody out to the mound, he didn't send the catcher out to the mound, he just clapped and said, you know, go get him. And they had their game plan in mind, and I think they were working on that, and they didn't really worry too much of. Obviously, these games don't mean all that much, so I think he's very relaxed in that respect. And you know, when these games start to mean more, I think he'll be a little bit different in terms of his demeanor. But he looks really relaxed, and he looks different.
Ever since they named him manager, I think he's already taken on that air of "I'm the manager, leave me alone."
Right.
But yeah. I think it's been good. Some of the young kids from NPB get a chance to play where they wouldn't normally get to play in a WBC year.
Right.
And also there were 4 amateurs on the team, and I think all of them, 3 of them played. I think all 4 of them played yesterday.
Yeah.
Osera and Takagi and Okazaki, and maybe 3 of them played. I'm trying to remember the 4th. Yeah. So.
One last quick thing. I just wanted to talk about the Gold Glovers real quick. I noticed that you voted for no one at third base in your vote.
Yeah,
I just wanted to remind you.
That was kind of an oversight.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you it was an oversight. I apologize to Shuichi Murata for that. I was looking at a bunch of different things, and I did sort of – one thing kind of took my – breath away, which is his terrible rating, his fielding runs saved in WAR, which I got a peek at.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else makes it look pretty good. I actually like him. He didn't have a good, you know, he started on that big high from the 2012 Japan series when he looked like
Brooks Robinson Jr.
Yeah, that's the word. He doesn't look like anybody Jr. He looks like everybody's papa. But anyway, no, he was on that, and he plays really well. And then he's very aggressive at third base. He covers his ground well. So that was a slight to him. But also when I voted, I knew that he was going to win anyway.
Well,
that was a California voting for not voting for a Democrat in the presidential election. Because it ain't going to matter. 10,000 of us could take vacations in Mexico and forget to vote, and there'd still be a Democrat in the electoral vote.
Right. I've been impressed with him since he has become a Giant. And the things that I mentioned on the Facebook page when you wrote that stuff, I said, his footwork is much better. and that has improved his balance, and that has improved his throwing. And those were all issues when he was coming in on ball. I mean, a lot of guys got on base because Shuichi Murata was not a good third baseman at the Bay Stars. And
he's cut down on that. They could care less whether he was a good third baseman. They were trying to sell his home runs, and they came to the Giants, and I'm guessing somebody said, look, son,
yeah,
you may be a home run hitter, but you're playing third base right now.
Right. So play it, yeah.
I think I could give credit, some of that credit, to the Giants coaching staff and to his own maturity. But of course, on the other hand, he's the one who made the effort, so he gets, there's two elements there.
And then the only other thing that I had a problem with on the Golden Gloves voting was that Yohei Oshima didn't make it in the outfield. That was weird. I don't know that Aranami was that much better. But
I don't think he was.
I don't know. I didn't.
Oshima started the season hurt, but man, he's the class. He's the class of the Central League.
Definitely. And then in the Pacific League, I wasn't sure about Tanaka. It's sometimes difficult. To judge.
But Tanaka
pitchers.
Looks good.
Yeah, it's difficult to judge pitchers because sometimes a lot of the guys throw a pitch. You look at their fielding of bunting, and they're throwing a pitch that they think will be bunted in a certain area, and they can get to that area once they're coming off the mound. You know what I mean? If they throw a fastball inside to a right-handed guy and they think he's going to bunt to the left side, they can cheat over that way once they finish their pitch.
Well, I'll tell you, my impression is that Tanaka and Japanese pitchers, by and large, if you were to decide who could pitch by how well they field position, the major leagues would be full of Japanese pitchers.
Yeah.
Because they get set for the ball coming back to them. There's none of this, well, I threw it, he can't hit it, so what difference does it make where my body is?
Right.
Major league show-offy stuff there. Those guys are normally in a position to field the ball from the, they're getting into position as soon as their hand stops moving towards the plate.
Yeah.
Tanaka's really good at that. Now, the guy I picked was Yuki Nishi, basically because he made a tremendous percentage
mm-hmm.
of the team's plays when he was on the mound.
Yeah.
And also because he had a good fielding percentage, and he turned quite a few double plays. He turned a couple of double plays. So, I used basically numbers, and I picked him, and Kenta Maeda was the class of the Central League, like he is every year.
Mm-hmm.
He's quicker than Tanaka. He's the best fielding pitcher in Japan, I think, no, without much doubt.
My only shock in the Pacific League was that Adachi didn't get it. I don't know why.
Yeah,
Kenta,
I liked him. I think Imamiya was deserving. I'll tell you, I think Imamiya was deserving. Now, I didn't pick Imamiya just because I wasn't that impressed with him, mm-hmm. I think. But he had the kind of season that looked pretty good. I some indication he was pretty good as well.
Also, Yoshifumi Okada of the Marines, I think he should win every year because he's gonna take runs away from whoever.
He's slowing down a bit. He's not a sprinter anymore.
he still makes plays. Yeah. Still steals runs away.
I like him. I like Kuriyama too. I think normally don't vote for left fielders, but he's a center fielder without an arm in left field.
Yeah. All right, well, we got to wrap it up here. The producer's starting to give me the evil eye.
Yeah, and our producer at the Annex is giving me something over here.
All right, well, it's time to go. Thank you very much for listening to the end. Now, our next show will probably be in 2 weeks, but we're not even sure yet, so I will put something up on the Facebook page and let you guys know. Please send your questions and comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com. And we will talk about it on the show. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you when we see you.
Yeah, take care, dudes.
All right.
And dudesses.
And enjoy your off season.
Ciao.